I sold my car in Carvana last night.
Well, that's cool.
No, you don't understand. It went perfectly. Real offer, down to the penny. They're picking it up tomorrow. Nothing went wrong.
So, what's the problem?
That is the problem. Nothing in my life goes as smoothly. I'm waiting for the catch.
Maybe there's no catch.
That's exactly what a catch would want me to think.
Wow, you need to relax.
I need to knock on wood. Do we have wood? Is this table wood?
I think it's laminate.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's close enough.
Car selling without a catch. Sell your car today on
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
The Killer Bees! Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
Got two out at the corners here in the third. And Bregman sends one deep to left. It is back and it is gone. A three-run poke. Alex Bregman puts the Stros on the board in the third inning.
The Astros would not look back after that one, mostly. Some tight moments throughout, but for the most part, well, I mean, they held the lead the rest of the way. It's Brendan Riley in for Jeremy Branham with Joel Blank, of course, today. Joel, I don't know. I know you guys don't like this, but I feel like throughout this postseason, every game that happens, I gotta pump the brakes a little bit because it just feels like the moment Alex Bregman hit that home run, I was like, it's over. That's how I felt. And I'll admit there were moments throughout the game where maybe I questioned that a little bit more. But it just feels like everything, I don't want to say everything is going right, but it feels like when things don't go right, Valdez with, you know, errors, it doesn't matter. It feels like they're going to overcome it every time.
You shut your whore mouth right now because of the fact that I've been through enough of these to realize I never get overconfident. I've been burned in the past by being overconfident about my Houston sports teams. And I heard Lance talk about this morning when he said, I was outside, the momentum was good, everything felt right, and I took a huge risk. I went in the house. That's not something I do. And I'm the same way. Like, I will move from seats in the living room. Everyone, the whole house is sleeping, and I'm like standing right up against the TV if I know that it worked last inning to have, I mean, Abreu, I was just a mess. Just every pitch going, please get through this, please get through this. And then with Presley, I'm like, I got to walk, I got to pace, I got to, because I'm so engaged in it, but I don't want to jinx it because I, like we talked about the other day, the road is paved, and Craig Ackerman and I were talking about it on the phone. Basically, this is the Astros' year to either win it or to blow it. And
yeah,
the road is paved for them to get there and to take care of business. That's why it even scares me more that I don't even want to touch it. I don't want to think about it. I'm like, get up, get out of here, get all the way gone on the home run. I said, get over on the tracks. And I yelled it because the
oh, that one was so, that Bregman home run?
Yeah.
That was, am I wrong for thinking that felt like such a no-doubter?
I mean, looked and felt like it, and then I saw where it landed, and I'm like, I could have swore that was going to get to the track.
I mean, we're gonna get to what the Yankees had to say about that home run later on in the show, but that home run looked like it was leaving the ballpark. Like, I'm not talking, you know, I'm not talking just a home run. I thought that thing was leaving. The roof was open.
I did too.
That looked like a no-doubter. I had no concerns.
But immediately, my brain starts processing, okay, you got a three-run lead, you're in the fifth inning. You're in really good shape if you can just get through the next inning. And then Frombert, and I went, oh God, just keep the lead. Because then I'm starting to just like count down outs and try to match up pitchers going, just get through and finish the deal. So I'm not like you. I don't like people like you because I don't want anybody to get overconfident because this team is too good to fall short.
You don't like people like me.
Yeah, I don't like people overconfident.
But you do like me. I just want to clarify.
Yeah, there's a big difference.
But 713-780-3776. I'm curious. The Astros are undefeated through five games in the postseason. That's not going to happen the whole way. But I am curious if Astros fans are finding themselves having to pump the brakes a little bit or if they don't want to. If they just want to slam on the gas and say, this team is going to do it, confidently say, this team is going to do it. Because I agree with you. This is a team that's set up to, what is the wording you used? You said they're either going to win it all or blow it.
Yeah.
Like, there's no in between.
Path has been carved out for them to have a clear, straight line right through the playoffs. All the 100-win teams are gone. The Braves are gone. The Dodgers are gone.
You got
the
a
two-game
lead on the Yankees.
Yeah, you're playing the team that had 99 wins, and you're up 2-0, and you look like you're in control, you just don't want to see anything get in the way of the train as it's steaming down the tracks.
I just, when I look at this team and what they've done so far throughout this postseason, the starting pitching outside of Verlander in game one against the Mariners, no real concerns. I kind of look at yesterday's two runs as fluky. I don't know if that's fair, but that's how I feel about it. I don't think it's very often your starting pitcher is going to have two errors on one play in what probably would have been a double play if he didn't. Like
oh my God, for sure. Look, this is the second game in a row that he did this 70s disco move with a, you know, with the spin, fall, fade, and then throw it away. But if he could, even if he just eats that ball,
yeah, there's still.
I don't know that they get two runs in that inning.
No, I don't think they do. And they, I mean, who knows? Maybe they do. I don't think they do. And if he makes the play that should have been an easy play, I don't think they score anything. I think they win that as it. So the starting pitching outside of game one against the Mariners, I don't feel like they've really had any errors. I look at the bullpen, and you got a scare yesterday. And again, we're going to get up to that in a few minutes here. You had a scare yesterday, but for the most part, they've been shut down. And like the concern that you would have, I think, is the offense. And I know that the way they're scoring runs is it's pretty much all via the home run. I think I saw it was like 16 of the 20 runs are via the home run in the playoffs so far. But they're still scoring four runs a game. And like you scored one in the 18-inning game against Seattle. Like you kind of have an outlier on both sides. You have the 8-run game against the Mariners. You have the 1-run game against the Mariners. But as a whole, they're getting the 3 or 4 runs. And I fail to see this team losing very many games when they get to 3 or 4 runs in this postseason.
Well, the way the pitching staff is pitching, and I had certain questions about the bullpen, obviously, but the way that everybody has done their jobs, it's very easy to see why you can make that statement and believe it'll be backed up because of the fact that everybody's getting people out. And the fact that if Fromber doesn't do to himself a self-inflicted wound that turned into 2 runs, he probably throws a shutout, and he probably keeps the streak going against the Yankees where they don't hit, they don't score runs, and you dominate them. It shouldn't have even been this close. As much as they want to bitch about one home run and the one that wasn't, the fact is that their bats have been absolutely dormant. They should get in touch with Apollo Men's Health of see if there's anything they can do to help them get a little bit more thump in their stick. And they should also start looking at the fact that the mirror is the best place to start when starting to question why you're in a hole in this series and haven't done anything. The Astros are doing their jobs, and like we said, the ceiling is still high. Altuve, hardest hit ball of the night is a look what I found double play at the end of the eighth inning.
Yeah, and I'll definitely say he had a couple hits yesterday that felt like they could have or maybe even should have gotten through or would most of the time. And you do have to think at some point he's going to provide something. Whether or not he gives you the Altuve of the regular season, he's going to get a hit at some point. I know you guys saw, I assume, he broke the record yesterday.
Yeah, for most hitless at-bats in a whatever it is. In a
so eventually you're going to get something from him. And you know what else I was thinking yesterday, really more this morning, as I was thinking about what we've seen through 5 games in the postseason? And I obviously wasn't here for all these Astros runs, so maybe you can tell me this is the way they've always been. It feels like they've only played 5 games, and it feels like half the roster has had a moment that you look back on as a major moment in a postseason. Like, if they end up winning this World Series, I feel like there's already half the roster has huge moments where you go, that was key.
You can go basically around the diamond and down the pitching staff, and you can say, like I said, everybody's doing their job, but you're right.
Down to, like, Hensley, right? Like,
Hensley's done it. You know, the guys that haven't, Mancini, Diaz,
your designated hitter.
I'm not against, Alex suggested it on Twitch again today. We talked about it. It wouldn't be a popular move, but I would almost be in favor of trying Hensley at DH to get something out of the designated hitter spot because the slumps have been so deep and the wounds seem to be unhealable in terms of those two guys, Mancini and Aledmys Diaz.
You want to work him into the rotation until somebody does something, I'm fine with that. I wouldn't necessarily just give him the spot. You can try it out and see how it goes. But if you want to mix him into the rotation until something happens, fine. Yeah, I mean, that's been a dead spot. I'm not going to tell you everybody has made a major play so far, but you're only 5 games in, and you have
so you don't want to make a move there, but you want to move Altuve to the 6th.
Okay, spot. I don't want to get too deep into that.
I couldn't resist.
Yeah, I know. I debated on if we should get into that deeper today. And if we want to, we can. We'll see.
I heard the wheelhouse kind of piggyback on our conversation. Look, the thing is from Altuve. This is why the ceiling, I keep saying, we don't know what the ceiling is yet for this team. We've already talked about the pitching staff at nauseam in a good way. But when you look at the hitters, we don't know what they're doing at designated hitter. You're absolutely right. We don't know if they're going to try Hensley, I thought that Mancini would get another go at it yesterday. Maybe he gets one tomorrow, but I got to believe he's not done for the playoffs. And Altuve's not hitting. The DH isn't hitting. Maldi is. Yuli is. Bregman is. You know, Chaz is doing his job. So aside from
the bottom of the order, even when they're not consistent, they're making plays that make differences.
They're helping you out, which they didn't do most of the year. And then even Yordan is a guy, and he got a knock yesterday. But I think that he was believing the hype that he was just going to be walked the rest of the playoffs. And suddenly it was almost like a shock to his system. He started seeing 99-mile-an-hour fastballs letter high. And for some reason, you know, it took him a bit to adjust and catch up to it. So I think there's more still left in his tank. But this team right now, to be playing as good as they're playing and know that there's another gear they can get to, that's even more reason why you should have confidence. Just don't tell me about it.
The concern, if they were to fall flat on their face at any point, is that the bats that should get going don't. And then the bats that you've been surprised by. And you guys talked about it, I think, yesterday in Crosstalk a little bit. But the bats that have been surprising you, you know, slow down. The only thing I would say, and you never know what's going to happen. That's a possibility. Is I don't expect you to win with hitting. That's not how this team is built to win. Do you need to steal a game or two like that sometimes? Absolutely. But do you see a scenario where they're let down by pitching game after game after game?
Not game after game after
like,
game.
It might happen here or there. I'm just looking at like the series perspective. Because at this point, now you got to win two out of the next four. And then, of course, four out of seven. I have a hard time seeing you be let down by pitching a bunch of times in a single series.
Well, and the bonus caveat is that you're starting pitching so good that you don't even have to go through much of your bullpen. There are going to be guys that have to get work on the side because they're just not going to get into games because your starting pitching's been that good. We talked about who was going to be the four guys that were going to be the horses. And those four guys, of the four guys, Javier really hasn't even pitched that much because they didn't need him in Seattle. The starters did their jobs in games one and two. I think Fromberg would have gone even deeper yesterday had he not had the hiccup and the bad dance move that cost him two runs. And I think that you look at that and say the strengths just continue to add up from the pitching perspective. From an offensive perspective, you're right. This team isn't constructed like years past where they can beat you with average, they can beat you small ball, they can beat you with home runs, but they can always beat you and put up crooked numbers. You don't know how many you're going to get on a given night, but to your point, because of the pitching, if you get if you get three,
you're going to have a really good chance more.
If you do the reverse quality start, if you do three or more, you're good.
Yeah, that's how I feel. And I do want to get into the shaky eighth. I don't know if it's fair to call it that, but we'll get into how last night felt in just a moment.
713-776-713-780-ESPN.
Thank you, blanking on the number there. If you want to get involved.
You said blanking on the number. That's not nice.
That's what I did. This is the Killer Bees. What was that?
Was that unintentional?
Oh, it's completely unintentional.
I don't say Rileying on the number. I mean, don't bring me or my relatives into that.
Hey, Joel, don't get all Riled up.
Yes, exactly.
I did a podcast once that we called Riling Up, and I don't want to finish it because there are jokes that will come with it. But it was had to do with Riling Up, play on my name and another name. All right, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, I want to tell you guys right now about the people at Apollo Men's Health. I was there bright and early this morning. I saw the great staff. They take care of their customers, their patients. They really believe in what they do, so it's fun for them to be around the patients and see the results on a weekly basis. You can be the next in line. They have so many ways to help you, from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom. If you don't have the performance and the energy that you once had, you can see the people at Apollo Men's Health, and they can get you back there once again. They take care of you, and it starts with a multitude of different ways. If you're looking to get on a workout program, they have full body composition analysis. It only takes a minute, literally, on this machine, and then it charts all your progress, all your key numbers, and periodically you take another one, and you can see how well you're doing, how your body fat has gone down, how your muscle mass has gone up. All the important numbers are there. You want to recover quicker after a workout? HGH peptide therapy, stuff for your smoothies and fat burners, got those too. And of course, for energy, it starts with a B12 shot. It can go all the way to the multitude of different ways that they have for doing hormone therapy. Men and women capitalizing, coming into the offices, getting that hormone therapy done, and feeling better from a day-to-day basis. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by, and you are going to capitalize by getting a free body composition analysis or a free B12 shot on your first official visit. Then let the process go from there. Tell them the goals that you have. Tell them what you're trying to achieve. They're going to put you on a program that works. Check them out today, apollomh.com. They're the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Abreu fires. Judge in the air to right field. Got some carry. Tucker going back. Tucker makes the catch. Crashing up against the wall. Bader tags up safe at second.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
If you ask me, that was the one scary moment of the game.
Oh, yeah.
That was the one. And I was very curious in the moment how you were feeling about it because you had your concerns all year with the Abreu. I did see you tweeting some positive stuff about it.
I said, oh, God, multiple times. And then was trying to gauge Tucker's body language as to if it was gone, or if there was any chance at all. And then to see that thing find the middle of his glove, I was just, I let out the biggest deep breath I could possibly, going, whoo, my goodness, are you kidding me? Because, look, I'll give him his flowers. And I said, and I was tweeting last night, okay, I love you, Brian Abreu, now. But there's a reason why I've had the concerns I had all year long. They almost reared their head again last night.
So I was curious if you came out of that feeling good or bad.
But because I came out feeling good in a multitude of ways. One, because of the fact that he got out of it and it worked out yet again. Because there's been multiple times he just hasn't given up a run, but he set the table
that's
for disaster.
Thing. Yeah, his thing is to get himself into trouble.
He scares
trouble, get out
you.
Of it.
He pushes it to the brink, but he doesn't give up a run.
And I think you're getting to the point. You know, you're semi deep in the postseason now. Like, it doesn't matter how it gets done, if it gets done. I was just wondering how you were feeling about it.
I love the fact that he was able to locate some sliders because of the fact that his fastball, which I said, look, if you've got a $1 million fastball arm and you can't throw your secondary pitches when you get guys on base and you don't like to throw your fastball or it gets tattooed, you've got issues that you can solve between your ears that have nothing to do with how good your arm is.
Well, I think particularly getting out of the inning with a strikeout too.
And he was behind in the count. The fact that you're down 3-1 to Stanton and you go gas, and you get away with it, I hope told him everything he needs to know.
Yeah, it inspires a little bit more confidence.
Sometimes, no matter where you put it, 99's real tough to hit.
Now, we're going to, in 10, 15 minutes, get to what the Yankees had to say about that win.
Yep.
I'm curious, because I think you had two major moments in that game, negative major moments in that game. You had the close call on the home run, mm-hmm. and you had the Fromber double error.
Yeah.
Do you come out of that game feeling more like you almost lost? Or you should have won by more.
I came out of it saying you should have won by more.
I did too.
I mean, the whole thing to me was it was a self-inflicted wound with Fromber, and that Judge home run wouldn't have had any kind of the impact because they wouldn't have gotten the lead. You look at it and say, in my mind, I don't know that he even gives up one run. Even if he just gets the out at first base, he might give up one. But I felt real good in the fact that that was a double play ball. That was a one hopper back to the mound, not very hardly hit by Stanton. And the fact that all series long, they were able to control those big three bats that have been devastating for the Yankees. And in the process, put up all they needed. Like we said, a crooked number. They got the three spot. I felt like without Fromber's mishap, the Judge thing is a moot point to me. And I feel like it could be a shutout. I felt that
well,
good.
Well, I don't know if you get a shutout in the game. I think Fromber, I mean, I guess
he could have given up one in that inning.
I don't know. I'm not sure what happens there, but I looked at it like the Judge home run's not even that scary if there's not the two runs on the board
right.
from the Fromber moment. I mean, you don't like it. It puts you in a situation where now
you know what it is?
Nervous.
It's Rizzo's home run the night before. It's a home run in the eighth. It gets them a little closer.
Yeah, it makes you sweat a little bit.
It doesn't do what it could have done.
But without the Fromber double error in the inning that leads to two runs, you leave that game, or you leave the game feeling like the only sweat you had was the eighth and ninth. Whereas you were probably sweating a little bit more throughout that game because it was a one-run game. I still felt pretty good. I go into every inning expecting the Astros not to give up any runs. I mean, the Yankees obviously disagree.
Well, I wish I had that feeling. Because, I mean, look, I'm still mesmerized.
You're starting to sound like Jeremy with how often you expect them to have bad things happen.
I didn't say bad things. I don't have confidence in good things. When they happen, I'm extremely happy about them. I'm grateful for them. But I don't go in there with a ton of confidence because, again, we don't have consistency in the back of the bullpen, BMAC, to understand, hey, well, we know it's the seventh, it's so-and-so. It's always been seventh, eighth, and ninth. When Abreu keeps coming in, I keep scratching my temple going, this Ryan Stanek guy, he's pretty good. He's got a 1.15 ERA, and he's been like Houdini, and no one says there's anything wrong with him. He did pitch once, which means he wasn't unable to pitch. But yet he won't pitch where he's pitched all year. I don't know what's going on.
But BMAC, that's why, like, you know, obviously I deal with Jeremy and Joel a lot. And so I like to get a gauge of how other people are doing. Because, I mean, it's one thing to come into the postseason with the nerves. But then when you look at what they've done so far.
I'm feeling very confident. Going back to the topic last segment, I mean, this is like Joel talked about. It's really laid out perfectly for the Astros. If you look at the three other teams remaining, Yankees, Phillies, and the Padres, I would say the Astros have the best starting staff of all of them. They have the best bullpen. They have the most offense. And you haven't even gotten the best, obviously, out of Altuve. Alvarez hasn't hit for three games. Tucker hasn't really hit. Stanek, we don't even know how he's being used.
I'm very confused by that.
All these things seemingly going wrong, and yet they're winning every game.
But here's the thing, B-Mac. You say that, and I disagree, because of the fact that we said that might have been the closest divisional series sweep you've ever seen. The Mariners had every right to believe that they had they should have had at least one, if not two, wins in that series. They believe that they played their tails off. So you look at the way they – it's one thing, again, when we always say analytically, if you just look at the numbers, it looks like the Astros are steamrolling everybody and they might not be lose a game.
But that's just not how postseason
– But if you look at the games, it doesn't look like that.
I go back – I mean, this is going back a ways, but I go back to the 2005 World Series against the White Sox. The Astros got swept – but only lost
one
by
of the toughest sweeps in the history of the World Series.
They only lost the entire total run difference of the four game series was 6 runs.
Yep.
They were arguably they had a 14 inning game. They had a walk off against them by Scott Pacenik, who I think maybe hit one home run all year. But I think that White Sox team, much like this Astros team, just finds a way to win. And maybe you can find problems in the way they're winning. But I think they've done enough since even going back to 2015, certainly 17 forward to.
And I don't think it's finding problems. It's don't play with fire too many times. Like, at a certain point, stop flirting with disaster.
Yeah, but that's more of a scary thing, I think. And maybe I'm totally off base here. But that's more just like you being nervous than it is like totally reality that they've been playing with fire. Yesterday, they were definitely playing with fire. I'm not going to argue
that. But the Yordan game we're playing for, you're one out away from being down 0-1.
You're one out away with Yordan up to the plate. I feel pretty good there.
Even the best hitters only succeed 3 out of 10 times. Yordan, even if it's Yordan, you don't know he's going to do what he did.
I don't know. I hear you. I just the reality of postseason sports, but particularly postseason baseball, you're not going to be stomping on teams regularly. You're going to have to win in those tight moments, and they've done it every single time. I don't think the scenario exists that would make you comfortable. I just don't think there is one.
Oh, I do.
By the way, I don't
want to winning every game by 10 runs and they're not and the other team's only getting 2 or less in every game, I could feel real confident.
My point is that doesn't happen though.
Okay, but my point is that's why you don't get overconfident because anything can happen in baseball.
I will say I remember yesterday you suggesting, I don't know if you went so far as to say it, that if they went up in this one.
This was the key game.
Yeah, you would feel really good heading
I don't feel bad, and I did say that, I don't like voicing this because I don't like jinxing it. I'm just telling you, that was the key game to me last night because you know that they're 1 and 2 are going to pitch in New York. But here's the thing. I said, I think there's a chance, and maybe even a good chance, that it doesn't come back here for game 6 if they get last night's game. And I believe that. I think you can get 2 out of 3 in New York.
So that sounds like feeling good to me. You might not use those words. By the way, did you hear, I don't know if you saw it or not, and I don't know that we have the audio ready, but the Dusty interaction, he was being asked about how they've handled the core of the order for the Yankees really well, and he was like, oh, hold on. Like he didn't want to even go any further than that.
But yeah, I appreciate it.
He was worried about a jinx, so I feel like you and Jeremy would relate to that. Yeah, this was that interaction last night.
Dusty, you guys have pitched Judge really well so far this series. I'm not trying to jinx it.
Even as somebody...
Was that Allison Footer, I think, from MLB? It's possible.
I'm not sure. Even as somebody who does feel really good, I thought that was pretty hilarious.
Well, but that you understand the way I feel. I mean, I think baseball and playing it my whole life and through college and beyond, I've always been of the belief, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, but don't mess with the baseball gods. Like, if you're rolling... Don't do anything to have them have second thoughts about giving you the opportunities that you've had because it's like Altuve. When you're rolling, the balls that he hit last night, they find holes. They find gaps. They do good things for your team. When you're struggling on the struggle bus, those are the potholes in the road that you keep hitting. He hit 106 or 110 mile an hour laser that gets Olayed into a double play in the eighth. He had better at bats. He hit the ball hard, but he hit it at people to where you're. That's why I'm not going to say you need to touch Altuve. But that's the difference why I don't like jinxing anything, and I totally understand Dusty.
I've had that mindset in the past. Obviously, as a longtime Houston sports fan, we've suffered those scars, those slings and arrows for 30 years. But I think this team, they've built such a roster that, okay, Altuve can be terrible. Tucker can be terrible. Alvarez cannot hit for three games, but they built up such a stacked roster.
It can come from anywhere.
Exactly. It doesn't matter because someone else will step up.
That's why I
feel so good.
By the way,
any dumbass ever thought for an instant Yuli Gurriel should be anywhere but at first base because of the fact that he was going to light the world on fire in the playoffs? Shame on them, because Yuli is a freaking powerhouse right now.
It is so interesting to see if he can maintain that for a full postseason.
I agree.
Because if he can, I mean, it is such an extra layer to your offense. You talk about protecting Yordan. It's not even just protecting Yordan. It's making him one of the few runs that you need to score because he's the one on.
But it's making the offense go regardless if you have Yordan or not. The fact that he's so on fire right now, you don't worry about getting guys on for Yordan because you look at the guys in the lineup that can beat you. Bregman got you last night. Yuli's been, every single time he's up, he's barreling it. And you have so many different places in the lineup now that can beat you. To your point, most of the season, sometimes even 6, 7, and 8, 9 were a huge hole. Most of the season, 7, 8, and 9 was a massive problem. Now, those are the guys that are helping you out.
The Yankees seem to think that they just got unlucky yesterday. And you should love that. This is the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Available in all states. Must be 18 years or older.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Joel, one of my favorite, like, underrated parts of working in radio, the places who want to bring you in food.
I don't disagree.
I mean, well, you don't partake as often as I do, or certainly not as much as I do when we get it, but Kraft Pita brought us in some food today. And I told you off air, it was some of my favorite stuff that's ever been brought in.
That's one of the best sandwiches you've had. Look, Kraft Pita is outstanding, and our former employee here, but a good buddy, Jordan, was with them. And
oh, I had no idea. I was talking to him.
Jordan worked in sales for a long time.
I had no idea.
And what a great spot. They have one location working on a second, all here kind of in the Galleria Westview area. First one is what, Fountain View and West Park?
San Felipe.
Second one is West Park in and around the Galleria area. But boy, I'll tell you what, from salads to wraps.
Healthy too.
The pita chips. I love the pita chips as well, but everything they have was really tasty.
Which, by the way, I mean, you can tell by looking at me, I don't love a ton of healthy food, but I did enjoy this very much. They're going to be at the Culture Map tailgate on October 27th. Yeah, I just wanted to shout them out because that was some great food.
No question. Appreciate you.
I love having BMAC here because I usually have to be the only one who's confident about the Astros on this show.
Oh, shut up.
And we're going to get to the Yankees and their thoughts that they just got unlucky yesterday. Probably next segment.
Can't wait for that.
But BMAC said something in the break that I thought needed to be brought to the air.
Yeah, no, I'm very confident. Like I said in the last segment, I think if you look at the other three teams remaining, the Astros have the best starting staff, they have the best bullpen, and they have the best offense. Plus, they have the postseason track record and the experience. And I'm at a point, before the series started, I picked the Astros in five. I don't think the Astros lose more than two games the rest of this postseason.
I'm not even willing to go that far. And it's not that I think what you're saying is crazy.
See, I don't think you're giving the National League enough credit by saying that. And again, I don't want to jinx it. I don't want to get cocky. I don't want anybody to think that I think that.
I would be a little less confident if it's the Phillies because Nola and Wheeler at the top of their rotation is certainly scarier than what the Padres can throw up. But I'm just done doubting the Astros. Obviously, 19 and 21, they had some problems that they didn't walk away with the World Series. But I'm at the point with this specific team in 2022 that I'm not going to doubt them anymore.
I'm curious if you guys would agree with this. You know, in all sports, sometimes a team gets hot in the postseason, and that's part of why they're able to win it all. And I think the Astros are maybe quietly hot because they're not necessarily dominating with any one thing. It's coming from everywhere, and so it's a little bit quieter than it is if you're hitting a bunch of home runs or you're shutting everybody out. I kind of think, on top of being the most talented team in the MLB postseason, I think they're the hottest team in the MLB postseason.
It's hard to argue. I mean, they're 5-0.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess that is a little bit unfair. I mean, you could talk about the Phillies, too, even being where they are. It had to be hot to get there.
Well, here's the thing. Like, when you knock out, when you're the Phillies, and you do what they did, and you weren't a 100-win team, and you were trying to find your identity, and you get rolling, and then you take one game one on the road in San Diego, you look at it and say, that was the hottest team. Now, because you lost game two and you lost a four-run lead, now some of the luster's worn off, but yet still the track results are there. BMAC, to your point, I'm not doubting this team. I'm just not ready to anoint them prematurely. I believe in this team. I love this team. But I'm not going to sit there and tell you, here's the crown, here's the throne. You win because you got to earn it.
It's going to be so great when the Astros are up 3-0 in the World Series. And Joel's still like, I'm not ready to crown them. It is not over.
We've seen this Astros team be a killer of teams with a ton of momentum. I mean, obviously going back to that Yankee series back in the summer, the Yankees looked like they're going to win 110 games, 120 games, and the Astros took 5 out of 7. Then the Mariners out of the All-Star break had won 14 in a row. Astros went up to Seattle, won 3-0. So, I just think this Astros team, not only are they most talented team in the remaining in the playoffs, but sometimes you just see this in sports where you get lucky breaks where all the teams that could compete with you, like the Dodgers and the Braves, just get knocked out and things just open up for you.
And I get that. You play the schedule that's given to you, and the teams that are left standing, you can't handle their business, you handle your own. You just look at it, and the one thing that I keep going back to from a conversation we had yesterday, and I don't know if you heard it or not, BMAC, but the one thing that's when we were talking about what's the strongest point, what really impresses you the most about this team, and I said it's just the way that their maturity and the way and their tenacity and the way they've handled everything. No situation too big. No deficit too large. You come back with two outs in the last inning, Yordan in game one. But the pitching staff, when they know if they have any hiccup at all in Seattle, you lose the game because they're the home team. You've done everything and every situation. And even last night, a lot of teams would have gone off the rails to defend themselves against the Yankees. To go at Aaron Boone and Aaron Judge and all the other guys that had something to say, like Severino. But Bregman to say, well, when Soler was hitting the home run with the roof open to beat us in the World Series, we weren't saying anything. And that ball went far. And we didn't say that it was because the roof was open. I mean, they handle everything with like an even keel. And that's what I love the most, is that that's why I believe so much in the long term, is that no matter what hiccups may happen, they're not going to throw up on themselves.
713-780-3776. I'm not asking you to go as far as BMAC and say that the over-under on losses the rest of the way is 2.5. But I am curious if you're allowing yourself to step on the gas a little bit and truly believe confidently that this team is going to do it this year. Because 5-0 through the postseason right now, and I think it's easy to do. I honestly had to slow myself down because I came in thinking they were going to do it. And I was like, honestly, it was before yesterday. It was after game one. Like yesterday morning, I was getting ready for the show, and I was like, how is anybody going to beat this team? And I was like, well, hold on. That's not a fair thought to have when you haven't lost a postseason game. Because I think you automatically slow things down a little bit when you have a postseason game. And Fuentes Respector saying so much can go wrong so quickly. So,
I agree. And course. Plus, you've seen in the fact that a Red Sox team was down 3 games, came back and beat that Yankees team. It can happen. That's another reason why I don't like it. The one thing that I thought about last night, and I want to get your guys' opinion on this, that really I don't think enough people are focused on and is a difference maker, because you can say, well, they got an ace this year with Verlander, and they got Lance.
And an
back.
Ace with Lance, and an ace with McCullers, and an ace all with that Javier. Kind of
stuff. You know what the key is that no one really focused on? Last year you had a double-wounded Alex Bregman that had the fun sucked out of everything that they did. And not only was he not performing on the field, but that intangible of what it meant in the clubhouse and in the dugout. Last night when he hit that home run and everybody was already doing the Ric Flair and getting ready for him, how he was going to celebrate, and the emotions of positivity that Brett came with it, plus he's a stick right now again, and defensively he's playing well, that might be that X-factor element that no one's talking about that's the biggest reason and difference between the two teams.
You said it yesterday, and I agreed with it, that you almost need that. Like it feels like in the postseason, the teams that go all the way have some sort of extra energy to them. And maybe that's ridiculous to say, but it does feel that way.
Brennan, you know what it is?
Ridiculous at all. I would say, I mean, obviously you probably say Altuve is the leader of this team. He's the guy that's been with the team the longest. But I would say Alex Bregman is their confidence. Where Alex Bregman's confidence is, the rest of the team
but
follows.
Here's my point. Too, as it relates to what I said earlier, the fact that they have that kind of disciplined mentality to take on anything without overreacting, and that even keeledness is complemented by the fact that there's the looseness. when there's a celebratory moment or a big moment,
they can have fun.
They can get caught in it, have fun with it, let it all out, and then refocus back in. They were too tight last year. There was none of that, so it was constantly the grinding of, we got to win, we got to win. We don't have Lance. What are we going to do? We got to win. This is kind of like where they can kind of breathe a little.
You know, it's a one-player example, but Fromber talked about it yesterday. He said he doesn't know that in the past he would have been able to settle down after the double error where, you know, that they go on to give up two runs in that inning. He said he doesn't know if he would have been able to settle down and figure it out.
Blame it on being whimsical.
That might have ended the game, but that's not what happened yesterday. It's not.
But we've seen a lot of those guys do that. I mean, Luis Garcia struggled down the stretch, and he turned it on, obviously, in the 18-inning game. Jeremy Pena couldn't hit anything outside of the part of this zone, and now all of a sudden
he's... Urquidy, for a while we were talking about being the third starter in the playoffs. Then he fell off the planet, found his way back. All these guys have had their ebbs and their flows, but that's, again, the beauty of when someone's down, the other guys pick them up.
But the ability
McCormick said it the other night. He said, when the top half is hitting, then there's not as much pressure on the bottom half and no one expects anything from us. When they're not and we do what we did in game one and we can do, that's why we're a good team.
But the ability to do it within the game, beyond just like one guy struggling, somebody else picks them up. Like, honestly, it's kind of crazy. We're 45 minutes into the show and we really haven't talked about the fact that Fromber, I mean, a double error is pretty tough. Like, that's an easy moment to let yourself ruminate with and not figure things out afterwards. And he was great the rest of the way. He wasn't just good. Like, he was a major plus the rest of the way. It was like it didn't affect him at all. We do need to get to the Yankees and what they had to say. Not the Yankees fans, the Yankees players. We're going to do that next. This is the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Brendan Riley in for Jeremy Branham today. BZ Money coming up in a minute. Last time Jeremy was out, we had a pretty good day. Last week I was out. Did not go very well.
I don't think we need to cover that.
My goal is to make this. I would love so much in our next segment, Joel, to have the best week we've ever had with Jeremy out.
We spoke about it when you were out too.
Yeah.
With the exact same feeling.
Well, you
so
did
let's
not
just
do
see
well.
If you can yeah, so let's just see if we can reverse the trend.
So where do we start with the Yankees? Because it was like
the roof. The roof is on fire. We need a home run, so don't let that MF-er burn. I mean, they are so mad that roof was open. The excuses, the finger pointing, the fact that it's one thing if the fans do it. If the manager does it, and then he starts indicating it. And here's my first big beef with, I don't think I've heard anybody else say this, but my first initial thoughts when I heard Aaron Boone blame the roof and say it would have been out at our place. Guess what? Then don't fold like a freaking cheap envelope in the second half of the season and have home field and have it go out in Yankee Stadium.
I saw conflicting reports, but did you guys see all over social media that there's like either one or two places where the home run would get out?
I saw there was only one ballpark.
That's what I saw first.
That's what I'm referring to.
I saw one first, and then I saw two later, but that one didn't say who the other stadium was. But regardless, one or two, who cares?
If you have the red ass and say it would have been out at our park, then get home field advantage so it could have gone out at your park. You didn't, so it didn't get over it.
Not only that, but don't base your expectation about what's a home run based on the smallest right field in all of baseball.
It sounded like it. Boy, it sure felt like it when it left the bat. Well, you know what? So did a couple other home runs that didn't get out. It happens.
Don't only, you know, base it on the smallest right field, but like maybe we shouldn't be worried about whether or not the roof was open. And we're going to play a bunch of audio.
Especially since the Astros don't even control that.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to say. I love the dumbass Yankees fans that think it's part of the cheating scandal. We were cheating. We have a way to manipulate games by opening the roof so that the swirling winds can affect only their team's home runs.
For the record, I think they should have control. That's part of
baseball. I agree with that.
I do, but that goes back all the way to the 2005 World Series. They wanted to keep it closed to keep the noise in, and baseball made them open it up.
I hate that. I
went back and watched the telecast, and I don't know if you saw this part of it or not. They highlighted all the rules when the stadium was being built and the extra money allocated as to, and we knew in the regular season, if it's below 80 degrees, if the humidity's at a certain level, the roof has to be open. Otherwise, you should have had a dome stadium. See? But they went on and on and on, and then they went, as a caveat, like an afterthought, they went, and oh, by the way, in the playoffs, the Major League Baseball controls it. That's the only story!
I get the idea that the city controls it in the, well, not city, but rules that they have with the city control it in the regular season. I just think if you're going to let teams essentially spec their own ballparks in terms of, you know, the way they're built, like that's part of the sport. If you don't want it to be part of the sport, which I'm not advocating for this, but if you don't want that to be a part of the sport, then make universal rules for what a stadium looks like. And if you're not going to do that, let the teams decide whether their roof's open or not in the postseason. They're the ones who have a retractable roof. Let them make the call. But regardless,
but here's the thing. To me, this is the reason why this has such a negative connotation, not just league-wide, but it's why it's such a hot button for Houston. It's because Bill O'Brien. Because Bill O'Brien was the one that was adamant the roof was always closed in Houston, and it became a big story and a big deal, and everybody was, and Palillo was always a massive, massive issue with it. The fact is, it was always looked at as a negative. I think your point is the most spot on, and that is the home team should control, it's their park, it's their field, it's their advantage. If they want the advantage because they want it louder, even the announcer said at the start of the game, it's definitely not as loud as it was in game one because the roof isn't open. Well, guess what? If the home team had its druthers, it probably would have been shut. Yankees, take note. The Astros were with you. At the start of the game, they wanted it closed.
Let's get to some of the audio. Aaron Boone talking about the roof being open.
You know, who'd have thought? I think the roof open kind of killed us. I think it's a 390 ball. I think it was like 106 at whatever. And when I went out to take Seve out, we noticed it a lot with Tucker's ball. You know, the base hit he got to right, it kind of looked like it just went and stopped. And then I think Judge's a homer all the time.
Wind was blown in?
The wind was blown, yeah, across like that. So, yeah, I didn't think like he smoked it like no doubter, but it felt like his homer's to right.
I got to be honest. Like, I don't mind that coming from a fan. I don't. Because I don't necessarily know that he's wrong, but as a manager,
I agree. That's fan logic in a conversation at the water cooler at work.
Yeah, it's reasonable. I don't have an issue with the fan saying that.
Yeah.
But I have an issue with the player saying it, and I really have an issue with the manager saying it.
Well, let's talk about the fact.
If that was my manager, I would not like that.
Let's talk about when Bader came over into right center field and made a catch on a ball that I thought was destined to come off the wall. And they highlighted how you could read his body language and what he was saying to Judge and saying, wow, the wind really killed that thing, died it, did the wind and the way it's blowing and all that stuff. Guess what? It helped you too because you caught that ball. It's the same thing with the strike zone. The things that New York fans are nitpicking and the players are talking about today and the manager is talking about today, it works both ways. You know what? You get some calls, you don't get some calls. You have some hard hit balls that are caught. You have some that aren't. You can sit there and blame the elements all you want, but it works for both teams. So that is the most pathetic, like hanging on to any kind of hope and thread of how they got screwed mentality. That's so New York.
Well, it's you don't want your manager talking about getting unlucky. You don't, and that's what's going on here. And here's the thing. Maybe you look at it differently if it's like a single player. It's the manager, and then it's a couple players. Luis Severino asked if he was frustrated the Astros have his number.
The team really frustrates you that they've had your number for so long and it's happening again?
Not at all. I threw a great pitch. I mean, he hit it at 91, so that's the only thing that I'm going to say. And Judge hit it at 106 and didn't go out. So, I don't know. They got lucky.
They got lucky.
I mean, I didn't know at the beginning how hard he hit it, but when I saw the iPad, I know the wind was blowing. I mean, that was the only reason that I got out. I think I make a good pitch in that situation there, you know, and that's it.
Roger Clemens said it this morning. He said that on the bench. He said, you know when you're pitching at Minute Maid Park, you throw pitches to make them hit it to the center of the field, because you know that the lines are short. It's the same way if you play at Fenway Park and you're a left-handed hitter or a right-handed hitter that wants to go the opposite way. You know how short that porch is, and you know that there's a chance that a lazy fly ball can get out. Yankee Stadium right field isn't exactly cavernous. You know the fact as a hitter that you can get away with one that might go out. It doesn't matter. This is where guys get too caught up in analytics.
The way that just left and right, like everybody on the team was talking about exit velocity. I just thought that was hilarious.
It was like a fact, like, oh, well, if it only goes out at 92 miles an hour, then it can't possibly.
It's just
go
funny.
For
that's the thing.
But that's my point. So what are you going to do? You take 106, you take 92 from it, right? And you say, well, we get an extra point and a half or run and a half because ours was hit 14 miles an hour faster. Our home runs tallied more miles per hour off the bat. No, because guess what? Every pitch and every hit and outcome is different. So a 92 exit velocity barrel didn't get all the barrel, but it got enough to get in the bleachers. 106 didn't. You can't sit there and say they got lucky. Bregman, don't pitch him inside. The one thing everybody knows is he knows how to hit in Minute Maid. If you give him something on the inside with his command of the strike zone, he'll turn on it and he'll put enough of the barrel on it to get it elevated, and he succeeds with it.
And you're exactly right. But not only going back to that Severino clip, he keeps talking about, oh, it wasn't a bad pitch. But that's to exactly your point, Joel. The scouting report on Bregman is if you go inside, you got to go all the way inside. You got to get it off the plate to where he doesn't swing, because his swing is so short. He's mastered to be able to hit it out to left field there. Severino left that too far over the plate, bottom
line.
It doesn't matter that it was 92 miles an hour, because he put it in a spot where Bregman could pull it to the shortest part of the field.
I don't know how you look at that hit and talk about exit velocity suggesting it shouldn't get out.
Everyone knew that was gone off the bat. How would you not know that's
gone off
the bat?
But, Brendan, here's the other thing. And B-Mac, again, when I always say if you have an analytical answer to something, you'll always have the numbers that can back up your point of view. But it's still a point of view. It's not a fact. Because you can say 106 versus 92, then give me the launch angle, because that matters too. Because you can hit 106, but if you don't get it up high enough or you hit it like a laser beam, it may not get anything more than a single. But if you get the right launch angle on a 94 or a 92 and you get it up in the jet stream or you hit it to a short porch, kudos to you, because you're playing the elements.
Now, real quickly, I want to make sure we include all of the Yankees who I at least could find talking about how lucky the Astros were, essentially. Kyle Higashioka on Bregman's 3-run home run.
How did you view it?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a terrible pitch at all. I guess in a perfect world, it could be higher, but, you know, he didn't, I think even he'll admit he didn't really hit it well off the bat, but he hit it well enough to get it out. So that's just, you know, how it goes sometimes.
I mean, here's the other thing. Define that it was a good pitch because it was in the strike zone, because it was in a position where the umpire might call it a strike, because there's plenty of good pitches that get hit into another zip code because of the fact that either elevate it or it was an off-speed pitch hanging over the front of the plate. So define what a good pitch is, because a good pitch in the right ballpark is successful. A good pitch in the wrong ballpark is on you.
Yeah.
When Correa talks about all the extra work Maldi does on each hitter, I guarantee you if Maldi went into a park like that, or he goes into Fenway, or he goes into Yankee Stadium, he says one place you can't miss on left-handed hitters in Fenway is inside on the inner half of the plate.
Do we think Bregman would admit that he didn't hit that ball that well?
Well, one, absolutely not. But two, he's wrong.
I mean, I agree.
Keep going back to the point. I mean, go ask Robbie Ray and the Mariners if that pitch that Alvarez hit out in game one was a good pitch. I mean, we're talking about home runs. Well, Jeremy made the point. Well, it was a baseball off the plate. It doesn't matter.
That's what I said.
You put it in a spot to where he could get to it. We know Bregman with the short swing can get to that pitch, and it's the shortest part of the ballpark. You allowed him to hit that home run. It wasn't a good
pitch. It's all the elements that factor in. If you're talking Jose Altuve and you're a ball out on the outside part of the plate, now you might have a chance to make sure it doesn't get out of the park. He may hit it, but he won't hit it out of the park. If you have the reach and the size of a Yordan Alvarez and you go a ball out on the outside part of the plate and you don't think there's a possibility he can get to it, that's on you, not on the hitter or the ballpark or the roof.
9491 with a great point on the text line. Altuve's double play was a 106 exit velo. Should have been a home run.
That's right. That's exactly like you're comparing apples to oranges. Different pitchers, different pitches. So just because you say, well, we hit ours harder at 106 than yours at 92, we should get the extra credit. You just got lucky. No, not at all. That has nothing to do with it.
If the Astros have made a mistake and pitched that inside to Judge to where he could have pulled it to the Crawford boxes, then guess what? It would have gotten out, but maybe they followed the scouting report a little better. It made him go to a longer part of the ballpark.
I don't know if you know this or not, but if my aunt had outdoor plumbing, it'd be my uncle. So there, New York, take that.
I'm going to be honest. I think you should love it as an Astros fan. I think the Yankees sitting here and talking
about... You're
living
rent-free.
Yeah, I think they're talking about how unlucky they got is exactly where you want to be up 2-0.
I love the fact that you're the evil empire, too, that everybody's hated forever and a day, and they go, if you like the rest of the nation, if you like these cheaters just because you hate the Yankees, and you like them more than you like the Yankees because you hate the Yankees, that's on you.
All right.
Oh, my God.
Coming up next, we're going to make the most money we've ever made on BZ Money. We're down a little over $300 of Mr. Gao's money. We're going to win it back this week. It's Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.